Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Gemma Wayne, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are here to talk about your second book, Chains of Sand.
Yes.
In your words, what's the story?
Well, the story is set against the backdrop of Israel's most recent conflict with Hamas in the summer of 2014. And it traces the parallel journeys of two men. First, there's Udi, who's a 26-year-old veteran of the Israeli army. He's killed five men. He wants to leave Israel and move to London. And then we have Daniel, who's a Northwest London Jewish boy, very comfortable life, but he's desperate to emigrate to Tel Aviv. So they both have very different pushes and pulls driving their journeys, but what they share is a sense of their destiny not being in their own hands. And as the conflict breaks out, it's amidst chaos in Israel and a surge of anti-Semitism in London that they're really trying to unpack their identities and make some big decisions about their lives. Alongside that is a third strand of the narrative, which is a tale of forbidden love, set in Jerusalem a decade earlier between a Jewish girl and an Arabic man. Ultimately, the consequences of their relationship impact some of the other characters in the present day.
And I would say that the overriding theme, and I'll go through some of the characters, Ella, Safia, Dara, Batia, Avigail, Kasim, none of their destinies is in their own hands.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I think all of them are struggling with in different ways. So an example being Udi, who's the Israeli soldier. One of the things that he's struggling with is this tension between he feels just such a lack of power in his own life for lots of different reasons. And on the surface, he says it's to do with the economy and lack of opportunity. But a lot of it is to do with the tentacles of the army constantly interfering in his life, calling him back, calling him to reserves. So he just feels that he has no power there. Yet at the same time, when he's a soldier, he feels that he has too much power over other people, over the Palestinians. So that for him is a real tension and one of the things that pushes him to want to move to London. As you mentioned, though, a lot of the other characters have it in different ways. So who should we go for? Dara, who is a young Jewish girl, and she falls for a slightly older Arabic man. And she knows that it's going to be difficult. She knows the society she lives in, but she can't resist the pull of him. And I think that love story was really important to me because often when we're in love, I think is when we're most open to trying to understand the life and the point of view of another. And so I think both she and Kasim try to kind of construct these dreams of possibility, but they're constantly hemmed in by the society that they do inhabit and the prejudices and discriminations and parameters that govern their existence.
And that those moments, especially of young and, in this case, forbidden love, definitely makes you think, I mean, this is why teenage anthems of love can conquer all are written, because it is in that insane thing that you think it's just you and us against the world. But they all, in their various ways, realize that the world is much bigger than them, unfortunately.
Yeah. They do. And I think there's a point where for a moment they both believe it's possible and they really do love each other. Mm-hmm. And they take a trip at one point. They go camping and they're away from the city. They're away from anybody who knows them. It's the first time that they don't have to hide and pretend and make excuses. And they have this kind of ideal few days together where it works and it is possible.
And she's just a girl and he's just a guy and they're in love.
Exactly. And then towards the end of that trip, just as they're beginning to go home, Dara starts to feel again this weight of the city in which she lives, the weight of Jerusalem, how complicated it is, how heavy it is. And once they get back to the city, all of those things do start weighing on them again.
And for Udi, one of the things that is... Well, there's a couple of things that are complicating for him. Because despite being, I guess, first generation Israeli,
Yeah.
He is also of Arabic descent and looks Arabic. So even in Tel Aviv, he is discriminated against, even being a soldier. So he houses those horrible feelings of, there's almost an everyday and an historic. There's a personal and a political. Some of the personal tragedies, there is a sexual assault. Abigail undergoes a horrible, this was one of the most disturbing things in the book, because we hear about conflict, we hear about this particular conflict on an almost daily basis. We are inured to the everydayness of it, as is experienced by both Palestinians and Israelis. And so it was Abigail's public shaming and assault on a bus for being a woman, for being an unorthodox woman, for not knowing her place and not covering herself and deferring to a man, which we do not think of as liberal Jewish ideals. We think of the police in Saudi Arabia shaming women.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're so used to a people living under war, the sort of more domestic violences came all the more to the front for me, because we are in this bubble. Like, that happens over there. Then something that could happen to you on the tube, that could happen to you in your own bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And you're living under war. Like, enough already.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that was your response to it, because that was exactly one of the things I wanted to try to do. Is, I think that we're used to viewing this conflict within a specific framework, and it's usually very black and white. And what we lose, I think, is exactly those personal stories, and we kind of miss the humanity that exists on both sides. So I really wanted to try to explore that and engage with these, as you say, very intimate and personal stories that, you know, could be love or loss or hope, despair, that, you know, that are there and are much more complicated than the way we usually view it. I think the two characters you just mentioned, for Abigail, for example, this is one of the things, when I was doing a lot of my research, and Israel is somewhere I go quite frequently, so I'm very familiar with it, but I was surprised during my research to discover even more variety within the population. I think most people perceive it as, you know, everyone's Jewish, well, you know, quite homogenous, but it really isn't. There's so much within it. And as you say, there is, you know, discrimination even just within the Jewish part of the population. So for Abigail on the bus to, you know, to be a woman, this is quite a topical issue in Israel right now. There's a whole argument going on about prayer at the Western Wall and whether women should be allowed in the same space as men. And, you know, this is something that women are really fighting for. And that female voice was something I really wanted to explore and raise. And I think it's really important, particularly in conflict situations and in peace efforts, because I think that as women, we're often, all across the world and all types of societies, we're still very much the other. And we are therefore in a position where we're used to and have to challenge the status quo, ask more of the establishment, demand more. And that's what Abigail's trying to do. And she does that in a very public way with her. She's a journalist. She does that with her writing. But then she suffers this incredibly personal assault on herself because of those parts of herself. Similarly with Udi, being a Sephardi Jew, he's of Iraqi descent. As you say, one moment he can be kind of a hero. He's, you know, he's a soldier, he's fighting for the country, he's accepted. The army is usually quite egalitarian. But then he has dark skin, and that is still a thing in Israel, in many countries. And so we have a scene where he tries to go into a club. It's just, you know, a normal 20-something, you know, evening activity. And all of his friends are let in, and he's not. And that's why. And that's a very difficult thing for him to deal with. And again, it's him trying to balance what he loves about Israel And we hear this refrain throughout the book where a lot of the Israeli characters say Israel's the best country in the world. And in many ways, it is to them. But there are also these really complicated challenges which are there.
RadioGorgeous.com.
What you just were talking about really just clicked in my brain about one of the ways we talk about Israel. And as an American Jew, I'm not a huge fan of Israel just because of political, and I was never Zionist, etc. But wasn't there, didn't know, holding up my hand there. But the other perception, which is there, is that, you know, hence my surprise that, you know, and this is the dirty little secret of Judaism, that we're just like every other religion and just like every other people.
Yeah.
And we're just as sexist, racist, elitist, obnoxious, wrong, bad, good, great, whatever. And don't put us in another category. Mm-hmm. Enough with the another category already. And enough with putting Muslims in this horrible category and Jews and Christians in this great one. No, everyone's an asshole. You know? And equally an asshole.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I thought was interesting is that Kasim's character, as he evolves and what occurs to him, someone said, oh, you know, in commenting on your book, you know, you can see the path to extremism. Like, if you had experienced what he experienced and have the tools at your disposal that he has, is that extremist?
Well, I think that is one of the
Israel
questions.
Israel has the army. Is that extremist?
Yeah.
Or is that just a, you know, an arm of the state? If your state doesn't have any arms.
Well, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask in the book is, you know, I hope that the fundamental core of the book is the story, and that's what drives you on. And I didn't want it to be a preachy book or have any kind of political message about the conflict, other than I wanted to just explore the grey between the black and white, and just really try to highlight that in a conflict where, you know, a lot of people tend to have an opinion about it, usually quite an impassioned opinion, and I think we all have such conviction about the truth of the situation. And I wanted to ask, you know, not what is the truth, but is there a truth and whose truth is it? And my own view is that they're kind of, exactly as you say, from all these different perspectives, there is more than one truth to each situation, and chains of sand really is what happens when those truths collide.
Let's talk about Daniel.
Okay.
And the concept of Aliyah. He's called, in a sense, or wants to find himself, just like any other young man. And especially, I mean, I really like the city here because I hear so many stories of people who were working in the city and then found it really unsatisfying and go on to be entrepreneurs and do all these creative things. I'm like, everyone should have to go into the city, and the creative ones get spat out and do really great stuff. And the other ones, it you know, chews up the way it chews. You know, it'll have fodder just like the army.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me about he's in one sense a really lovely thinking young man like Udi, and in another sense, incredibly willfully blind.
Mm. Yeah, he is in both those ways. I think for him, his desire to go is very much caught up in something he finds difficult himself to articulate. But a lot of it is to do with a sense of apathy about his life. He looks around him, he knows how lucky he is. He's, you know, he's got a great job, a good flat, a nice car, very supportive family, friends. He's aware how very fortunate that existence is. Yet he still feels an emptiness. He still feels a lack of fire in his life. I think he particularly juxtaposes that to his grandparents who survived the Holocaust and feels like he'll never be as worthy as them. He looks to his parents who have made their careers from nothing and he feels like, well, he'll never be as successful as that. It's almost like his life has been too laid out for him, a bit too easy. And he sees people around him who have such passion, who get up and go to protests and do things with their lives. And he wants that, but he doesn't feel that. And in some ways, that's, you know, it's not about his Judaism, but it's reflected a bit in his Judaism, in the way that he keeps kosher, but he doesn't really know why. And he goes to synagogue, but he doesn't understand the Hebrew. And it's all this just kind of meh-ness about his existence. And then when he goes to Israel, he just catches a taste of something more. And some of that is to do with the country being younger, it being very dynamic. He feels it's less structured, he's more able to make a mark. And then, of course, some of it's also to do with the girl and the passion that that raises for him.
And there's a girl here at home, but just like anything else, you don't know what the spark is. He has his closest friend, Safia, is a modern Muslim British girl, who's thinking, who's questioning. And yet he doesn't seem to value that until perhaps too late.
Yeah.
And he doesn't... And his story, to me, ends up being very open. But one of the things you touched upon, which I think is really seminal here, for now, for Syria, for Ireland, for ISIS, for time immemorial, the sense of the adrenaline firing through a young country in conflict. It gives you a sense of purpose. And for the young, that adrenaline, it's almost like they need the war. It provides clarity. It's a situation that has to be, in their opinion, acted upon. And that's almost the draw.
Yeah, well, I think that kind of the apathy that we were talking about before is something that is not unique to Jewish people or this conflict. I think a lot of people of Daniel's generation might feel it at some point. And I think it's this phase of life, possibly before you set down deeper roots, maybe before you have children or whatever other things in your life. I know, you know, since having kids, I suddenly feel much more passionately about whether the nearby park is safe, or, you know, these small issues that suddenly become really important. And sometimes that's how you channel that passion.
You can suddenly see beyond today.
But there is this period where you kind of have all this passion and possibly know where to channel it, or you're not sure what direction you want to channel it in. And sometimes that doesn't do anything except for just, you know, lead to some slight dissatisfaction. But I do think it sometimes leads to people looking for the cause, and that does sometimes flow towards extremism. Even for Daniel in the book, and, you know, he's not becoming an extremist, but he suddenly, for the first time, feels passionate enough to go out and protest about something during the conflict. And it's when there is this surge of anti-Semitism in London. And so in a way, it's still something that makes him want to leave, but it's kind of the first time that he feels the fire.
I would like for you to read, it's almost a poem at the end, trying to address the truth.
He didn't push a four-year-old girl, but she was pushed. They were still pushing, and that was the truth too. And Gaza's a shithole, and that's the truth. And Israel's had a big hand in it, and that's the truth. And the Palestinians are desperate, and that's the truth. And some of them are murderers, and they're all punished. And somebody kidnapped three Israeli kids. And somebody burned a Palestinian in revenge. And rockets were fired, and missiles were launched, and Israelis ran to shelters, and Gazans lay dead. And it's all the truth. Black and white, and tit for tat, and no nuance, and nuance in everything. And nobody looking for it, and everybody knowing, and nobody seeing. And still this feeling that he must go home and do something.
This podcast was presented by Donna Freed and produced by Donna Freed. Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.